Tuesday, January 20th. The first reading from 1 Samuel chapter 16, verses 1 through 13. The Lord said to Samuel, "How long will you grieve for Saul, whom I have rejected as king of Israel? Fill your horn with oil and be on your way. I am sending you to Jesse of Bethlehem, for I have chosen my king from among his sons." But Samuel replied, "How can I go? Saul will hear of it and kill me." To this the Lord answered, "Take a heifer along and say, 'I have come to sacrifice to the Lord.' Invite Jesse to the sacrifice, and I myself will tell you what to do. You are to anoint for me the one I point out to you." Samuel did as the Lord had commanded him. When he entered Bethlehem, the elders of the city came trembling to meet him and inquired, "Is your visit peaceful, O seer?" He replied, "Yes, I have come to sacrifice to the Lord, so cleanse yourselves and join me today for the banquet." He also had Jesse and his sons cleanse themselves and invited them to the sacrifice. As they came, he looked at Eliab and thought, "Surely the Lord's anointed is here before him." But the Lord said to Samuel, "Do not judge from his appearance or from his lofty stature, because I have rejected him. Not as man sees does God see, because he sees the appearance, but the Lord looks into the heart." Then Jesse called Abinadab and presented him before Samuel, who said, "The Lord has not chosen him." Next Jesse presented Shammah, but Samuel said, "The Lord has not chosen this one either." In the same way Jesse presented seven sons before Samuel, but Samuel said to Jesse, "The Lord has not chosen any one of these." Then Samuel asked Jesse, "Are these all the sons you have?" Jesse replied, "There is still the youngest, who is tending the sheep." Samuel said to Jesse, "Send for him. We will not begin the sacrificial banquet until he arrives here." Jesse sent and had the young man brought to them. He was ruddy, a youth handsome to behold, and making a splendid appearance. The Lord said, "There, anoint him, for this is he." Then Samuel, with the horn of oil in hand, anointed him in the midst of his brothers. And from that day on, the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon David. When Samuel took his leave, he went to Ramah. Haydock Commentary. It seems that Samuel's tears were not soon dried up, as he lamented the fall of one whom he had formerly so much admired, and perceived what evils would ensue. He had hoped that the decree might have been revocable, but God now convinces him of the contrary by ordering him to go and anoint a successor. A fragile vial was not used, but a horn, to denote the duration and abundance of David's reign. No one doubted that Samuel might lawfully offer sacrifice at a distance from the tabernacle, as he was guided by God. The Jews allowed that prophets have this privilege and may dispense with the ceremonial law when they act by God's authority. The men of Bethlehem trembled, being full of consternation, as the prophet did not often stir much from home, and they feared lest he had some bad news to impart, or he came to punish some of the people of Bethlehem. "Surely the Lord's anointed is here before him." He spoke this about Eliab by his own spirit, judging from his handsomeness, but the beauty of Saul had concealed a deformed soul. God had positively rejected this eldest son Eliab, as his pride seems to have been the greatest. David is called ruddy, like the spouse in Canticle of Canticles. Some explain it of his hair, so Alexander the Great is said to have had reddish or golden locks. He was anointed in the midst of his brethren. If he told the brothers, he would no doubt take the necessary precautions to keep it secret, as the whole family would have been in imminent danger if the transaction had come to the ears of Saul. Josephus says that Samuel only informed Jesse in private, and David's brothers treated him with no particular distinction, whence it is inferred that they had not been present when he was anointed. Some witnesses seem, however, to have been requisite, as the title of David to the regal dignity depended on this ceremony, and none were more interested than his own family to assert his pretensions. He now had a right to the kingdom, but not the possession, being like a son expecting his father's estate as his future right, of which as yet he cannot dispose. The Spirit of God then came upon him to make him prosper. God endued him with all those graces which might render him fit to command. David himself prays in the Psalms, "With a princely spirit confirm me," or "strengthen me with a perfect spirit." He began to advance in virtue with more rapid strides, while Saul became every day more criminal and abandoned to the devil. David received the spirit of fortitude and of prophecy, of which Saul had formerly had some experience when he was first elevated to that high dignity. He was changed into a new man and adorned with all that could render a king most glorious. Though he returned to his usual occupations, the Spirit of the Lord enabled him to destroy wild beasts as in play, and to compose and sing many of those divine canticles which we still admire. The Gospel from Mark chapter 2, verses 23 through 28. As Jesus was passing through a field of grain on the Sabbath, his disciples began to make a path while picking the heads of grain. At this, the Pharisees said to him, "Look, why are they doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?" He said to them, "Have you never read what David did when he was in need, and he and his companions were hungry? How he went into the house of God when Abiathar was high priest, and ate the bread of offering that only the priest could lawfully eat, and shared it with his companions?" Then he said to them, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. That is why the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath." Haydock Commentary. In necessity, many things are done without sin, which in other circumstances it would be unlawful to do. The maker of the law may abrogate or dispense with it when and where, for just cause, it seemeth good to him. Thus the church can dispense with, change, or abrogate, for just reasons, the discipline of the church, founded upon church authority. This we prove also from the action of David, which the Scripture notices without blaming it, because the observance of the law, prescribed for the utility of man, must yield to the necessities of man.